Listening to this podcast is as easy as pressing play. And now, thanks to BWS, your drink is a click away. Welcome, contactless drive-thru at BWS. All you have to do is order on the app or from your car, and they bring your favourite drinks to where you are. Drive through and shop safely at BWS. Now that's convenient. Now let's get into today's podcast.
Well, welcome along to First Crack, and as always on a Sunday night, it's a real treat to be alongside David King and Lee Montagne. What are you chuckling about?
Oh, Jason, he's very funny.
Gents, I'm going to kick things off tonight because I think we need to celebrate the fact that we are one game away from a completed regular season. Who would have thought we could get to this point back in March when the season was suspended?
Nah, true. It's been an amazing year to get to this point, and with only one game to go, the top eight set, we know who's going to play finals. We just have no idea what order it's in, but it's been wonderful. It was a great weekend today, wasn't it, to sit and watch teams and having results needing to go certain ways, and it all came down to tonight's game, and the Western Bulldogs got the job done.
So let's take a look at the current top eight, and the great part is only positions 3, 4 and 5 are locked in. So one game of football, which is, of course, tomorrow night between Port Adelaide and Collingwood, affects all the other positions.
That's unreal, isn't it? And Travis Old has done a fantastic job to keep us on the edge of our seats until the completion of tomorrow night's game, which will be an absolute cracker, I've got no doubt. The ladder's interesting. Two teams have come in from the eight that weren't in there last year, and two teams have slipped out. So Port come from 10th, St Kilda come from 14th, and GWS and Essendon slipped out. So there's not a lot of change from year to year, really.
I know we'll talk about the Giants a bit later on, but it is amazing that they're not in the eight.
Yeah, it is. I thought at the start of the year that they could finish on top of the ladder and have a real crack at winning the premiership. They've been the big disappointment. I did declare on this show about 6 or 8 weeks ago the top eight was set. I ended up getting one wrong. The Giants dropped out after winning only 2 of their last 6 games, and the Western Bulldogs came in from that point of the year winning 5 of their last 6.
What would you have said if someone had told you at the start of the year the Giants won't make the 8? Would you have been completely shocked? Or, because you were onto this and Leon Cameron's game style at the start of the year, would you have not been as shocked?
Oh, I would have been shocked to not make the 8. I thought they were good enough to be, at minimum, a top 6 team, especially after their first performance of the year. They were massive in round one. Yeah. You just went, well, they're away. They're going to be a powerhouse through the preseason. They looked terrific. Not a lot of excuses there for me. That's the problem. There's not a lot of excuses in terms of injury in comparison to other teams. So this is all on how they operate.
Okay, so let's take a look at the eight if Port beat Collingwood tomorrow night. So Collingwood fans, look away now, because this is how it would finish, and it would mean that the Pies would have to fly to Perth to take on West Coast.
Yeah, tough
at
ask.
Optus Stadium.
Tough ask for Collingwood. West Coast should get some players back. We'll touch on that later. St Kilda Bulldogs will be a huge game. The Bulldogs are in form. St Kilda made the finals for the first time in 9 years, so great to see them in there. And then, gee, the qualifying finals, King, you're going to be absolute beauties, aren't they? If it is Geelong v Port and Richmond v Brisbane, you're almost thinking the two teams that are playing away will be going in as favourites. Mm-hmm.
Whereas if Collingwood win tomorrow night, well, it's a hell of a lot better for them. They play St Kilda in probably Queensland.
It's an amazing year. That's a ripping final series, isn't it? If you're Brisbane, would you prefer Richmond or Geelong? Yeah. If you're Port Adelaide? I mean, you've got to beat the best to be the best, and that's the bottom line. Can you see anyone coming out of the bottom four on the table there and really challenging like the Dogs did a few years ago?
I think if there is one team, it's the Western Bulldogs again. And we'll touch on them in a minute, but I think that they've got something going there, the Western Bulldogs. They've won 5 of their last 6. They're in form, and they could be the one that might be able to win maybe 2 finals.
Are you favouring the Bulldogs over West Coast at the moment?
Well, I don't think that'll happen. I think Port Adelaide will beat Collingwood tomorrow. So I think the Bulldogs will play St Kilda. Love to see the Saints win, but I just like what the Dogs are doing.
Joey, what's your first crack?
Yeah, my first crack is beware of the Dogs. I'll tell you what, I've been impressed with how they're going. They are a different breed. And if you're a non-conformist, you've got to love the Western Bulldogs, because they are not playing the way that all these other teams are playing. We've seen this year that 6 of the top 7 teams on the ladder love to control the ball at times, and uncontested marks and short kicks. Well, no, the Western Bulldogs, they're clearly the number one play-on team in the competition, Kingy, particularly out of their back half. High handball team. They handball more than any other side. They don't like the short kicking and uncontested mark game. Luke Beveridge, he does it his way. And it worked for them in 2016, and they've stuck with it. And it's been a bit of a year where things have gone to and fro and up and down. But right now, he's got them playing the way that I think he wants them to play. And they could be a serious threat from the bottom half of the eight, I think. Oh, I really like what they're doing. And, yeah, they're the team to watch out for.
Do you think he really focuses on the top four, Luke Beveridge? Or do you think he just, his aim is, let's just try scrape into the eight and then we'll take it from there? Because he chops and changes, he experiments so much, he drops players all the time.
Yeah, we were talking about it before. And I think that through the course of the season, I mean, the back half of the year, they've bounced between 6 and 11 on the ladder. So at some point in the season, I think he says, realistically, top four might be out of reach for us at the moment. These teams are slightly ahead of us, and that's our lot at the moment. And I think then he has the ability to channel his energies into just qualifying. And they've done that, albeit late, they've achieved that. And I do think, and hearing his press conference today, hearing him say that we don't know what we're doing in the forward line. I mean, we've got Aaron Norton, who's got a cheekbone injury. How bad that is, whether it's relating to the eye socket or not, will tell us whether it's a 1 week, 2 week or season type injury. He may go small in the forward line. He may go tall. We just don't know with the Dogs.
Yep.
And that's why we love them,
yep.
Because we just have no idea. And I think that he's such a motivator. They play on spirit better than any other team.
And they're going to learn a lot from last year, getting absolutely, you know, they were caught on the hop by the Giants. They bashed them up. Luke Beveridge, they're not going to stand for that this year. They're going to come out in this first final and they're going to be ready to play finals. The unpredictability of them, you know, can catch out teams. But for them, they trust in Luke Beveridge. They trust, they believe in him. They buy into what he gives the playing group. And I don't know, I've just got a sneaky feel that this Western Bulldog side could do something special this final
series. The only thing I will say is that 2-6 versus top eight teams this year.
Yep.
Now, does that count for anything? I'm not sure, but a percentage of about 75 against the best. So they're going to have to improve. They're going to have to come up a level.
Well, how much does this change things, Aaron Norton's injury? You just touched on it there, but I don't know, does that raise...
Yeah, it does. This is bad. As Kingy said, it's a depressed fracture, ooh, I think, of either the cheekbone or the eye socket, and that'll determine whether he's able to potentially play in 2 weeks' time or whether he's going to miss 3 to 4 weeks. It's a big blow because they need him in that forward line. He is someone that just gives him that aerial presence. It helps everyone else around them. It makes Josh Bruce at least get the second defender and able to do his thing. It helps Mitch Wallace get a bit of isolation against a matchup that works. So fingers crossed for the Western Bulldogs that they can get him back out there, because even though he hasn't had his greatest year yet, he's an important player for their team.
And we're talking about against the best.
Yeah.
The night against Geelong.
Yeah.
He was awesome that night. Kicked a couple of goals. He took eight. I think he had six marks, half of those contested. So, you know, he's one player that just looks built for finals.
Yep.
So it'd be a shame if he is impacted.
I want to talk about the Melbourne Demons. Obviously, they've finished ninth now for the season. That is confirmed. They'll miss out on finals football. We heard Simon Goodwin say something yesterday. I don't think I've ever heard a coach say. Let's take a listen.
We aspire to be the best footy team we can possibly be. In 18, we achieved, probably overachieved. 17, we went right down. We're aiming to be a top club. We've still got work to do. But we present ourselves with an opportunity potentially, you know, again. So we'll wait and see. But we still need to get better as a team. We know that. We're not sitting here saying that everything's going well and we sit where we want to sit. We need to get better and be better. And that's our ambition. We're on the way.
So Jordan Lewis said last night on Saturday Stretch, perhaps Simon Goodwin just didn't pick his words wisely. Perhaps what he was meant to say was more they exceeded expectations in 2018. But what was your reaction when you heard him say we overachieved in 2018?
Well, overachieved, it's a strange word to fall back to for me. Overachieved, I think that if they think that they've improved this year or they've made progress this year, I think they're kidding themselves. There's not one person in the land, aside from Simon Goodwin, that thinks Melbourne have made progress this year. They've probably got four of the best 20 players in the competition. They've got they've had every opportunity in big games this year to stamp themselves and take control of their own destiny, and they've failed. And they've looked a confused footy club. I mean, Christian Petrarca is right now the best player in the competition.
Yep.
How can all these things go so well for them, yet they are not even in the eight? I can't believe that they are saying they've made progress. I just think that's miles off the mark.
It's a great point. That 2018 side, whether they overachieved or not, I'm not necessarily sure how you can overachieve. You try and win as many games as you can and go as deep as you can. They made a preliminary final. They've still got the exact same. The players that played that night in the prelim are all still in the list except for Jordan Lewis and Sam Frost, who's gone to Hawthorn. But in that time, they've handpicked two specific wingmen they've wanted to help their system. They've gone and got two key defenders who they specifically went and targeted, who are elite key defenders in Jake Lever and Stephen May. They've got in three first-round picks that are young stars, that are Luke Jackson and Cozzy Pickett and Trent Rivers. Yet, as Kingy said, they've gone down. Whether they ever achieved in 2018, they're on a downward trajectory from that point. So how does that happen? And I don't think it's a list thing. I'm just wondering whether it's an application thing. Are they really applying themselves to be as ruthless and improving their own performance as individuals and as a collective than compared to some of the other sides in the competition? Because it can't be a talent thing. These guys all played in 2018. They've had 2 years on and they're nowhere near where they reached in that year. So it's interesting. I just wonder where the applications are.
So who are you blaming more? Are you blaming, putting the onus more on the players or the coaches?
Everyone. Everyone included. The coaching staff. Are they ruthless enough, the coaching staff, with their playing group? We'll hear some read some comments in a minute from Tom McDonald.
Just before you do that. They've already had a review.
Yeah.
And we said this at the time. I felt they hung Brendan McCartney out to dry. He was a scapegoat for everything that was wrong at Melbourne mid last year. And at the end of the year, they made 10 to 15 changes in their football department. Josh Marnie, who's been there a long time and has overseen everything that happens at football club, they sat down and made calculated decisions, and this is where they are. Mm. Now, I don't lay all the blame at Simon Goodwin. I do with his terminology and what he's saying is progress. I don't subscribe to that. But someone at Melbourne has to put their hand up and say, OK, we've made some mistakes here, we're correcting, we're doing X, Y and Z, because their first review has been a complete bust. There is no hiding from that. So I don't know whether you trust the same people to do that again. That's my question. Yeah. You know, has Simon got the right support around him? You know, they walked, as I said, their identity at the end of 2018 was contested football. That is Brendan McCartney's method. They didn't like being challenged in a coaching sense, and that is Craig Jennings' method.
Right. Yeah.
To challenge, to throw up different things. Not all of them work. Not all of them are sensible. He probably laughs at half of his ideas, but it's about creating something different. You know, and we talked about the Diamond Demons and all those sorts of things they did with six or eight players running off the halfback flank at centre bounces. So they were doing things that were ahead of the game. Not now. Yeah. That's gone.
So do you think perhaps if the Demons had their time again this year, they would have used the COVID break differently? Because we're starting to see and we're starting to learn which teams have flourished during this year and used the COVID break.
Yeah, this grab caught my eye from Tom McDonald earlier in the year when they were talking about the COVID break, and they were saying that he said that we haven't once talked about football strategy or anything like that. They basically spent their time on Zoom just staying in touch, talking to others, where there are a lot of other football clubs that use that COVID break to fine-tune their game plan, to do interactive sessions where they could work on their football. And this also came off the back of, we interviewed Tom McDonald at the start of 2019 after they lost the prelim in 2018. Biggest game of their career against the West Coast Eagles. They got belted off the park. So much to learn from. And he said to us, we didn't review that game. And that caught my eye at the time, thinking, how can you not review the most important game you've played in, where you've been completely well and truly beaten? You can learn so much from it. So I just wonder whether there is more that, you know, that they can look into. And I think it's a blessing in disguise, to be honest, they haven't made finals this year, because the narrative would have changed. They would have been able to say, oh, we made finals, we've made progress, we're going okay. At least now, maybe they can have those really hard conversations and look in the mirror and say, right, we are a long way off. We really have to go and do a lot more as a collective and as individuals if we want to be, as Simon Goodwin said, a top team, which I think they potentially can get to in 2021.
They are squandering the opportunities that they have got with this
list. With the players they've got,
with this list right now. I mean, I look at the assets that the Western Bulldogs are going to game day with, and they're humming off about four or five brilliant players like Bontempelli, Liberatore, Dunkley, McRae, throw Caleb Daniel, bits and pieces of Aaron Norton, bits and pieces of Tim English from time to time. But the Dogs have got, they've got half the artillery that Melbourne have got.
So we talk about putting the onus on players and coaches. Well, the decision not to review the prelim final, that's a coach's decision not to do that.
Yeah.
What did Ross Lyon do back in your second?
Well, that's right. When we got beaten in a preliminary final in 2008 by Hawthorn, absolutely flogged us. And Ross Lyon got the playing group in, and we went through that with a fine-tooth comb. And he said, this is never going to happen to us again. And we really reviewed it hard. We came out in 2009 and won our first 19 games. And I just thought that maybe they've missed opportunities, you know, off the back of 2018, the COVID break, to really improve their game plan. Because as you said, what is their identity now? It still is around the contested ball and the clear. clearance, but they're not getting enough bang for buck for it. There's a lot that they can work on, and hopefully missing finals is now the catalyst for them as individuals and as a club to really roll up the sleeves, get dirty, and actually, you know, come up with something next year that can challenge, because they've got a list and players in that sweet spot that they should be playing finals.
Dennis Pagan called us wildebeests for 6 months. He said you got chased down by the cheetah and you just lay down and gave up. You gave up and you allowed him to kick 6 goals. I think it was the St Kilda prelim, to be honest. But, yeah, there's taglines that sit with you and drive you through the next pre-season and drive you to the next opportunity. They clearly haven't had that.
So to rub salt in the wound, Harley Bennell goes and breaches COVID protocols. He's suspended for 4 matches and Melbourne are fined $50,000. A staggering move by Harley, given at the time the Dees were still a finals chance. Kingy, you can't help but feel a little bit nervous now, given that 10 teams are now out. Their seasons are over. Players are going to want to let their hair down a little bit, but we've still got a finals campaign to get through.
Yeah, look, I'm worried about the traditional Mad Monday, if you like. I know it's been banned and the AFL have come out and said don't get involved, but a lot of these players, really, their attachment to the club is broken now. You know, a lot of these players are being delisted. I'm just nervous about tomorrow. I really am, or the next couple of days. If we're seeing what's happening with Harley already, a player that's sitting there, you know, drinking, watching his team play, that is still a chance to play finals. Mm. You know, staggering, really. But I'm concerned about the next 48 hours.
Concerning times indeed. We're off to a break here on First Crack. Afterwards, we're going to celebrate a few veterans who have called time on their careers in 2020.
That was great to see.
Yeah, that was great.
That was one of the great scenes of the year, wasn't it? Seeing that with the Hawks and Ben Stratton. And congratulations on great careers. But it was a great day. You were calling it. It was awesome, wasn't it?
It was good fun.
Yeah.
It was good fun. And I think, you know, Alistair Clarkson gets it. You know, he just gets it that, you know, sometimes you just got to let the players enjoy themselves and the theatre of moving him forward at the right time. You know, Jack Gunston could have been selfish. He could have kicked another goal. Would have taken him to 5 or 6 for the day. He was having a day out. But the only person that didn't understand the theatre of it was the person who was manning up on Ben Stratton in the goal square.
Yeah.
What was he thinking? But now some clubs just do it better than others, don't they?
Well, that was a classic case of how to do it. Yesterday afternoon, Essendon, Tom Bell Chambers bid farewell, as did John Worsfold. What did you make of these scenes?
Well, I was disappointed with this because Tom Bell Chambers, I mean, he's not a four-time premiership player or multiple All-Australian, but he is one of the more popular players at that footy club. And what he's been through, going through that drugs crisis, I just thought Essendon missed a trick here with a club that is still trying to find their identity and build their brand off the back of the drugs saga. A player like that, who meant so much, who was fit and available, I think they really could have played him and done it. You know, had made a big difference to this footy club. I've understood now that it's left a bit of taste in a lot of the players' mouths that played a lot of footy with Tom Bell Chambers that thought, hang on a minute, why wouldn't you exit him, exit your stars in the right way and play him in his final game? And now there's just a little bit of angst there saying, well, he, you know, that's a bit of frustration there. And I think they've missed a trick because, you know, you saw Cade Simpson there and we spoke about the Hawks. It can actually be a wonderful moment for a player's career. And for someone like Tom Bell Chambers, who's been through so much at that footy club and been through so many hard times, it would have been nice in a game that there was no, you know, finals on the line to have played him and just gone out in the right way. For a club that's had, let's be honest, a pretty ordinary year on the field, it would have been nice. And I just think it's maybe left a bit of pill in some players' mouths.
So he could have played physically?
He'd got himself fit and available to be right to play.
Right.
And he was told last week, no, we're not going to pick you.
See, I thought he was unfit.
If you were a player, Essendon, a senior player, would you have spoken up and said,
I believe there might have been some conversations had. There might have been a little bit of sort of locker room chat or some, you know, potential word about why isn't he playing? This guy that's been, as I said, one of the more popular players at that club who's been through so much. I just think Essendon missed an opportunity to really build their culture and build their identity with everything that's gone on with the coaching handover and their way they've played on the field. You wonder how that's going to leave and sit in some players' mouths over the summer.
The other one was Cade Simpson and Matty Cruiser last night. And it was nice to see Cade get, obviously, that game, but also in front of a crowd. There was atmosphere.
Yeah, and look, there's no easy way to exit your stars. We keep saying this, even Matthew Cruiser. I felt a bit awkward for Cruz. He's out there in his tracksuit, you know, just sort of walking off. The celebration was for Cade Simpson. We know that he's a highly decorated Carlton man. He is, you know, the one player they all look up to. 75 kilos, but has been able to do what he's done for a long period of time. So I felt it was a bit awkward with the player that sort of didn't play, that had missed a lot of footy, when this guy was, you know, the iconic figure. So it's never easy. There is no right or wrong way, really. But when the club does it like Hawthorn did and absolutely nail it, you go, well, that is it.
If you're a Hawthorn fan, you're loving what you saw today.
They make you proud.
Let's bring in Tommy Morris, who is up in Queensland. Tommy, talk to us about Essendon and a couple of their players' futures.
Yeah, well, just on, evening to you guys, just on what Joey was saying, you're bang on, Joey. My understanding is there's some serious unrest at Essendon at the moment. And it's sort of, it's reflected outside the club. And it's exactly the same inside the club. And the best example I can give of this, aside from what you're saying about Tom Bell Chambers, Joey, is Adam Saad, who's a consummate professional. He's missed one game in 3 years. There's a four-year offer on the table for him, as John Ralph has reported last week. But he hasn't re-signed. And I believe it's because he doesn't feel, at this moment in time, now he might be convinced, but at this moment in time, like the club is going in a way that's going to see them win a flag in the next few years. Who knows what's going to happen with Fantasia? Who knows what's going to happen with Danaher? There might be other players as well, but there is unrest there. And I wouldn't be surprised if there was some serious, I guess, changes to their playing list and assistant coaches over the off-season that reflect a club that, albeit didn't have a terrible season, performed well below where they would expect to and where most of us expected them to finish.
What are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting, isn't it? There's been a lot of chat about the Bombers, some senior players as well, you know, some older guys, what happens there. But there's still a bit to play out, isn't there? Particularly with the Joe Danaher stuff, Kingy. That caught your eye that they're going to give him 2 weeks to make his decision?
Yeah, if the players don't want to be there, that's fine. And I just, what's the extra 2 weeks all about? Or, you know, I think you've got to get on with it. You know, we've had a difficult year. The players have had difficult years. I know they've got to get to their manager and they've got to sort things out. But let's be realistic enough to know this has been going on for some time. They'll have a purge. There's no doubt about that. I think Saad will end up gone. You know, Fantasia will leave. I think Joe will probably leave.
Can you just on Danaher, he's going to spend this week meeting with clubs. But Ben Rutten said last night in the press conference, or yesterday in the press conference, that they want an answer very soon because they need an answer soon. But Danaher's not going to rush himself. So there's even a bit of tension in how long Danaher will take to make this decision. And other people at the club are absolutely aware of this as well. You call it a purge. It might be a purge, but there's going to be big changes at this club over the off-season. And they're saying publicly that the handover's worked fine. Like Ben Rutten said in the press conference that he is a significantly better coach because of what John Worsfold did for him this year. And that might absolutely be the case. But it doesn't mean that players and other people around the club aren't feeling uneasy about the whole way 2020 has unfolded.
I don't think it's a disaster, though. Look, if you lose some players, you lose some players. And I know everyone, we sat here last year, we've talked about Joe Danaher for 18 months.
Yeah.
You know, at some point, you've got to say, you know what, if you're still up in the air about whether you want to be here, let's just shake hands and move on. You know, this going and meeting with other clubs and allowing other clubs to sell themselves to Joe, well, you can't be in love with two different parties. He has to make a decision. Am I an Essendon person or am I leaving? And then once you decide you're leaving, then go and sort out the other clubs. You can't do the same thing at once.
The other thing is, how do we feel about Ben Rutten? Because we've seen with Justin Longmuir, we know where he's going with Fremantle. He's used 2020 very well, but Ben Rutten, do we know what he wants to do in 2021?
Well, even Matthew Nix, it took a while, didn't it? But at least the back end of the year, we really saw what Adelaide are trying to do and what they stand for. Essendon, we never really got a consistent run at what their brand looks like. So they've got a fair bit of work to do.
So 10 teams are done for 2020. 10 teams are into exit meetings and planning for the future. Problem is, they don't know what list sizes look like next year. Here's Alistair Clarkson's thoughts this afternoon.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure what the hold up is. Even if the league were able to tell us what the hold up is, so that we could have some sort of understanding of what's because it's pivotal to them. I only imagine it's something to do with the Players Association. And if that's where the hurdle is, well, just let us know that you're in talks with them and give us some sort of time frame, both from the Players Association point of view and from the league. I'm not sure if that is the reason for the delay, but just some sort of clarity around how long we need to wait for. But when it's, we think it's going to be next week, and then next week comes and it doesn't happen, and I think it might be next week now. It's just like, well, there's a fair bit hanging on it. A lot of people in the industry are hanging on this decision, so let's let's get the decision made.
It's a fair request from Clarko.
Yeah, 100%. I was saying, what are they waiting for? I think they're waiting because there are other options. Instead of just having cuts everywhere across the competition, I'm pretty sure the AFLPA and even the AFL will be discussing the opportunity. How do we find other ways to make money? Is it a longer season? You know, with some compression periods like we've had this year. You know, can you have more games and bridge the gap and not have to take the 3 to 4 players off every list? Which doesn't sound like a lot, but it's a big cut.
AFL don't want more games, though, do they?
Well, are they 100% opposed to it? I just think you've got to look at everything at the moment,
yep,
because of the finances of the competition.
Well, that's what's making it hard. Everything's on the table, and there's so many things you can work through, yet they've got such short time. I mean, they didn't really start these conversations until at least we knew where there was going to be a season going ahead this year. But it's pretty hard just to sort of, in 1 week, make these significant changes to list sizes and salary caps and things like that. So I know everyone wants to know, and I understand it. Your clubs have got to make the decisions, but can't just rush to a decision without really thinking it through properly.
The Giants are a fascinating story. Grand final last year, 12 months later, they've missed the finals. And Tom, they're going to lose some classy players as well.
Yeah, well, they will. They've already lost Aiden Corr. They'll probably lose Zach Williams. There's Harry Perryman as well. There's about 5 or 6 others at this Giants 8. But I guess if I'm going to have a first crack tonight, gents and Kath, I'd like to just talk about this Giants cycle, this list management cycle that just doesn't seem to finish. I know we've spoken about it on the show before. So the best example of this is Dylan Scheel goes to Essendon. GWS get a couple of first-round picks in return, and one of those first-round picks is Jai Caldwell in 2018. Now, Jai Caldwell is every chance to leave. Now, at the end of 2020, St Kilda's interim, I'm sure other clubs are interim as well. So how long can they continue to lose good players, get good draft picks in return, and then lose those players again a couple of years later? So Jason McCartney, this is where he's going to make his money, the list boss and the head of footy. My opinion on GWS is that next year, 2021, should be used as a bridging year. Now, this doesn't mean that you've got to bottom out completely, but let's reset the salary cap. So it allows them to then attract good players in 2021 or at the end of next year onwards. Because
They can't do that, Tom. Impossible for them to do that because they've got to pay overs to keep the players that are there.
But why do they want to keep them? Why? Because Jeremy Cameron wants 900, let him go for 900. If Zach Williams wants 900, let him go for 900.
So you're going to lose 3 or 4 stars in a 12 to 18 month period?
Absolutely. Because
how does that help your football club?
Because the cycle will finish with exactly this rut they're in now, where they actually can't get out of it. They're a victim of their own concessions. So I think they should allow those players to go and have a premiership team in 2022 or whenever that actually allows them to bring players in. Because how many premiership teams in the past have had 0 players that have had currency elsewhere in the first place? They actually can't trade any good players in because they've got no money to do so, and I'm not sure that's any way to build a premiership squad.
I can guarantee you, if they're not winning the premiership in 2022, if they allow Cameron, Williams and these young kids you're talking about to walk out the door. The hardest part with Jason McCartney's job is that other clubs are offering these young, talented potential stars $500,000-$700,000 a year anyway.
Yeah.
So they have to not necessarily match, but at least come 40%, 50% up from where they are to retain them.
Okay, so we can talk go on, Tom.
Can I just ask, King, about from a list management perspective, this, for lack of a better term, it's like a studs and duds model, isn't it? Like they pay their studs big coin and then they just have role players that come in to play roles at the bottom end of the salary cap. Can you honestly continue that for as long as possible? Because it seems to me like that's a really hard model to have for any length of time and continue to have success with that model.
Well, maybe that is the case, but you just can't purge stars.
It's just fascinating that we're having this conversation because 12 months ago when Stephen Cornelio re-signed, everyone was saying, oh, what's the secret with GWS? Why do they keep these players? Why do they all want to re-sign with the club? And now we're having this conversation. The other topic is you can have all the personnel, but what about the game style? And you said at the start of the year, Leon Cameron's got one more crack with this game style.
Yeah, and it's run aground, so there's going to be change there. There's no doubt about that. They'll have to embrace the forward half game and what other teams have done. But unfortunately, they're getting onto a system that's already 2-3 years advanced elsewhere. So that'll take time as well to embed into this group. And then you'll have to work out who fits in that system and who doesn't. But I just look at the coach himself. I know they're saying he's contracted and he's got another couple of years in front of him. I just wonder with the timing of the AFL saying that there's 6-month buyout clause in effect where terminated coaches get 6 months' pay. I just wonder whether that was a coincidence or there was something more in that. Because if there is the ability to get a, you know, someone in there that can correct this football club that by all reports have issues, there's players that want to leave, it's a very dangerous time for Leon Cameron.
So you think even though he's just re-signed for two more years, he's not safe to get to coach next year?
I'm concerned that there's just too many coincidences here for me. If you're the head of the GWS Giants right now, and you've got concerns, you'd have to have concerns. You've just missed the eight. Would $400,000 or $350,000 to reset and start again with a new coach be beyond the pale?
No, I think now you've got to give him one more chance. You've got to give him another 12 months and see. And if that doesn't work, well, then you pay him out his last year and it might be a bit more. But I don't know if they can go back and do that. Tom, your thoughts?
Well, the situation the Giants are in, it's a really interesting point from Kingy, is that Dave Matthews, especially, but also Tony Shepherd, the chairman, that they put a flag in the ground. And I think their tenures now are directly linked to Leon Cameron because they've verbally agreed and then they've done the deal. But you've got to remember as well, if they do want to sack Leon Cameron, which would be an unbelievable move given what we've just seen, and I don't think will happen, that won't come out of the soft cap. That just comes from the club because the AFL's given each club, I guess, permission or the ability to make positions in the football department redundant that does not come out of the soft cap for this 1 year just because of the COVID-19 outbreak.
These deals were done, Tom, when they were sitting in the eight and they're off the back of a grand final. So things have changed drastically. And often you don't see these things until they happen.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it's a dangerous time.
Just quickly, what are you doing right now if you're in charge of the Giants?
If I'm in charge of the Giants...
You keeping Leon?
Well, I'll tell you what, we're having a serious conversation because this is a football club that has got one opportunity left, I reckon, to win a flag with this talent group. If they start purging players like Tom's talking about, then they're in real trouble. And if the coach has any part to play in that, then it is a genuine conversation that needs to be had.
Okay, so if you're getting rid of Leon Cameron 12 months after a grand final, who are you bringing in?
Well, you've got to decide whether you've got the right man or not. If you make the decision you haven't got the right man, it doesn't matter who you bring in. But there's the shadow of Ross Lyon and these people that loom large. And that's just an opinion, and I'm not saying necessarily purge him, but they're the decisions and the discussions that they need to have.
I'm not talking about purging the players. I'm talking about if the players want money that you don't have or that you are struggling to pay, you simply let them go. I'm not saying go out the door. Cameron wants 800 or 900. Actually, we actually can't afford that for you at the moment. On your bike, away you go. That's not a purge.
Okay, that's enough about the Giants.
He's gone regardless.
Two big names to watch in the trade period, Ben Brown and Joe Danaher. What do you think is going to happen with Ben Brown, Key?
I think he'll stay. I don't think he'll go. I know that he's being shopped around, or for want of a better term, but I'm not convinced there's the level of interest that everyone keeps telling me, that he's just going to be a walk-up, you know, 15 to 25 pick that he's probably worth.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that other clubs are going to be prepared to give that up or pay the money that Ben either was offered... or thinks that he's worth, and for the tenure that he thinks that he's that's available or that was available at the Kangaroos at the start of the year. I'm not sure all those things are aligned.
Yeah, I think the Kangaroos should keep Ben Brown and Essendon should try their hardest to keep Joe Danaher. They're 26, 27 years of age. They're still in their sweet spot. Their peaks are their powers. You're not getting 200 centimetre, two goals a game, all Australian calibre players that just come out of, like, you know, you just fall out of the sky. So I think they should be trying to keep these players. We're too quick to try and move on, you know, all Australian calibre players. I think I'd love to see both those players stay at their clubs.
So unfortunately, some key players are currently injured, rushing back for finals. How much of a risk do you take with some of these key pillars in finals teams? Let's start with Harris Andrews. This one's obviously so initially diagnosed that he'll be back prelim final time.
I'm getting nervous talking about prelim final at the moment, to be honest with you, Kath. But just have a look at the... I mean, at what point do you say... And I know that it's all up to the strength and conditioning department to give the green light, but what fine line are you running? You know, are you taking the risk on playing someone that's just come out of the window, if you like? And Harris is a different story because we don't know whether he's close to the 29 days or 30, 35, 36. But if you continue the spin through and you've got McGovern and Lynch and these guys, they're right on the cusp of that 21-day traditional discussion.
To answer the question, the reason why you've got the double chance is you can afford to have one loss. So I'd play it safe if you're in the top four. Play it safe with Harris Andrews. Play it safe with Tom Lynch. You get another crack if you lose first week. Jerry McGovern, different story. That's an elimination final. I think you've got to roll the dice and play Jerry McGovern. So that's what I'd do. The teams that are in the top four, take the extra week if it's a 50-50. If it's the West Coast Eagles at McGovern, I think you've got to play them and roll the dice.
Do you think one of the main learnings out of last year's final series is never do a fitness test on the day of a final, as we saw with Phil Davis?
Absolutely.
Quickly, Presty and Yeo, if they're right, they play?
Yep, absolutely, straight in.
Tom, great work this evening. We'll let you go to bed. We're off to a quick break here on First Crack Plymore, coming up next. Big night on Thursday evening right here on Fox Footy. We have all the awards nights merged into one. The All-Australian Team for 2020, the AFLPA MVP, the NAB Rising Star and the Coaches Association Champion Player of the Year. Thursday night, 7:30 Eastern, right here on Fox Footy. Who's your small forward in the All-Australian Team this year?
Oh, it has to be Dan Butler for me. I think he's what he's done, not only he's kicked the most goals of any small forward this year, but I think also the impact he's had at that club. What he's been able to do for St Kilda, and his play and his goal assists. I think Dan Butler for consistency through the whole year. I know Tom Papley was awesome in the first 4 weeks. He kicked 10 of his goals in the first 4 weeks, but Dan Butler for mine should be a small forward.
You mentioned the Saints. How great to see Brett Ratten and them all securing their first finals berth in 9 years. What do you like most about St Kilda?
I want to have a look at their forward half work. And called the Seagulling Saints, they're like the loose, you know, Dicko used to talk about seagulls to a hot chip. Well, that's them in the forward line. Just have a look at how they form at the front. In terms of front and centre, the old terms, off the back of their great reference points in the forward 50 in Max King and Rowan Marshall and Membry and Ryder when he's forward. Just look at the organisation that goes into this. It's a little bit different to Geelong. Geelong just want one target there. They're happy to have multiple players represented at the front. If the ball spills, they're onto it and gone. And their defender is usually trailing or loses contact, loses concentration. They're there to pressure as the, to lock that ball in and create some sort of traffic. But have a look at that. That is a perfect form. And all the big boys have to do if they can't mark it is bring it to ground. So they're 10th in the conference side 50s, yet they've got the fourth best attack. So speed of ball going in there, predictability is the top of the square. Look at that there. Absolutely first class. And those guys are on it. So there's no surprise why they've kicked the most goals, 0 to 30 in the competition. Top six in the comp from marks. And they basically have great accuracy this year because they're strolling goals. Look at this. Bang, at the right spot there just to put that tackle on. So I really like what Brett Ratten's done with this forward line in particular.
And know your assets. You've got tall 200-centimetre forwards, Rowan Marshall, Max King. They're not necessarily marking it. You've got quality smalls. Kick it in, give them a chance. Maximise what you've got in your side, and that's what they've done really well this year.
Joey, this week you scouted the Dogs for the Fremantle game tonight. What stood out?
Yeah, there's something jumping out with the Western Bulldogs that caught my eye when watching the clip, and we'll just go to it now straight away into the vision. Just their hunt and their work rate to get from contest to contest. We see here, so this centre bounce, it's Liberatore and Bailey Smith, but you could substitute these with any of their midfielders that we know they've got in the in their side. And just watch the work rate as this ball goes inside their forward 50. So at the moment, they'll get into the contest. They don't win it. And then you see Bontempelli and Suckling. They're playing as half forwards. You just let the play go on. But there's a reason why they're plus 17 in ground balls when they win the Western Bulldogs, because they just continue to outnumber. There are the half forwards. There are the midfields. They're in a position where they win that ground ball. They don't get used on this occasion, but it makes it so difficult for teams to stop because their work rate, this just continued the one passage of play. You stop it there. There's Bailey Smith. There's Liberatore. There's Suckling again. They just continually get from contest to contest and outnumber. They're so good with their hands. It's a real strength of theirs, their ground ball. So they, every time they win ground ball this year, they've won the game. Guess where we're playing finals? The Gabba, in the Gold Coast, we're talking about slippery. It's going to be on the deck. I just think they're suited to play finals footy, and they're all in form at the moment. These Dogs midfielders are that hungry and desperate, and work rate is at an elite level. That's why I just think they're a bit of a smoky come finals time.
Yep, they'll be licking their lips. So the regular season is done. Finals footy is here, of course. What changes? How does the game change statistically?
Well, statistically, all we can say is there's the same amount of contested possessions available, but the uncontested possession, the easy ball drops right away. And off the back of last year's numbers, it drops by 60 uncontested possessions per game. So that's 30 each per team. And I worry about the guys that rely solely on outside ball.
Like
guys that rely on others winning that contested footy and flicking it out. And I think the easy names to throw up are players like Brad Hill and those guys, that is their function in the team. Now, they do provide tremendous support to both ends of the field, and there's a role for those guys. But they're going to operate off some pretty low numbers. And I think this year with the shorter games, there's going to be players that have 10 possessions that play absolutely meaningful roles for their football clubs. But in terms of those guys, the alarm should ring pretty loudly for guys that rely strictly on outside ball.
It's also a time of year where the veterans really stand up in the big games. And we saw a few cases today, Joey, of when a couple of veterans taught a few of the younger players a few lessons.
Yeah, we did. It was a bit of the men v boys today. And on a couple of occasions, you were calling this one king, and you said it was like a bench press on a youngster. This is a bloke that's played, what has he played, 20 years of football, Sean Burgoyne against the first yearer, Noah Anderson. He said, get out of the way. This is how it's done, young fella. And then we saw about 2 hours later, Gary Ablett to another first-year player, Dylan Stevens, 16 years, one of the all-time greats, just said, out of the way, young fella. And I think for those two first-year boys who are going to be absolute stars, Stevens and Noah Anderson, it might be a bit of motivation over the summer to hit the gym, get on the bicep curls, because that's the men against the boys and the pre-seasons there. It was good vision.
Noah Anderson, he's had a pretty good year, though.
He's a star.
Let's hone in on Collingwood. So is Brody Grundy still the threat we've always thought of him as?
Well, they're another hit-out, strong, clearance-poor commodity, Collingwood. I can't work out why, because last year we were talking about Brody Grundy as the complete package. Big deal, seven-year deal that was signed. But just have a look at some of the ruck work from last week. And it's not all his fault. He's up against a quality opponent, but you look at the final. We're going into a final series now. You know, they're short one game. I haven't seen the final teams for tomorrow night, but you know, Port possess a damaging ruckman, great tap ruckman. Then if they aren't to get the job done there, they come up against Nick Natanui. So nothing's going to get any easier for this facet of the game. And I just wonder, you know, why they're number two for hitouts, yet number 10 for clearances and number 10 for scores from clearances. They're great at defending lost clearances, but do they get enough from the ones that they actually do win? And are they getting enough from this component of the game? So I've just got a little asterisk, and I'll be looking for this tomorrow night to see what the Pies can do.
Yeah, and scoring from stoppage is also a big part about winning contests in your front half. And we know for most of the year it's been an area of concern for Collingwood, being able to win contests in your front half. So if you do win the clearance, they're not necessarily getting bang for buck anyway. But you're right, Grundy's had a down year. There's, you know, I just think he's off the
boil. What do you think's happened?
I don't know whether he's carrying an injury. We might only find out once the season's done, but he's not the Brody Grundy that we've seen in previous years.
This is some of the stuff he was doing last year, getting forward, you know, strong, great tap work. And this is probably from round one, where he was just awesome against Tim English. And he's just a different player at the moment. I'm not sure why.
And if they lose tomorrow, they're playing the West Coast Eagles first final up against Nick Nat. You know, he'd want to be feeling fresh. Maybe the bye might do him the world of good. That is one thing he hasn't done this year. We spoke about it the other week, Kingy. Grabbing it out of the ruck and winning his own clearances. That's completely gone from his game. But, yeah, they're just not getting bang for buck with one of the, you know, the elite ruckmen we've had in the competition in the last 10 years.
One of the unfortunate aspects for the Pies now is they would have been thinking they had Steele Sidebottom coming back.
And Jeremy Howe. The other thing is, I'm looking forward to seeing this forward line. So, DeGoey and Cox have only played four games together for the year. DeGoey, Cox and Stevenson have only played together twice for the year. So that's a totally different dynamic again. There could be just a score fest for them if they can get those three to fire, something different that we haven't seen. I feel for Nathan that he's, you know, hasn't got Sidebottom to throw in there as well, and we all know the story with Howe, but it is what it is.
So tomorrow night, Collingwood v Port, who are we tipping?
I think Port Adelaide, they're going great. They're just flying nicely under the radar a little bit. They've got all parts of their game going really strongly. The contest work, clearances, their defence and their forward line, I think they should beat Collingwood.
Well, it is the last game of the regular season. Tomorrow night right here on Fox Footy, AFL 360. We'll have all the build-up from 6 p.m. Brett Ratton is on 360 tomorrow night as well. And then it is into Monday night football, Collingwood v Port Adelaide. The Power win and they finish on top. The Pies win and they finish 6th instead of 8th, meaning they will avoid a Perth final. And then post-game, it is on the couch with the crew.
This bloke, Scott Pendlebury, might just be the greatest ever magpie. And they've had a few good ones. The numbers to prove it.
Pendlebury sneaks inside. And we marvel at Scott Pendlebury once again.
314 games, the most ever in the black and white. 161 a skipper, number one. Passing his coach, Pies icon, Nathan Buckley. 5 best and fairest, 1 behind Bucks. Chucking a flag and a Norm Smith too. Those numbers are great. He's greater. With Pendles, you don't analyse, you recognise.
Pendlebury out of the stoppage. Brilliant.
One of the best to ever do it. It's like he can see into the future. He knows what you're going to do before you do. He'll use those fakes. Sharp little sidesteps.
Here's the bring-up to Pendlebury.
To make you miss.
The Pendlebury. Oh, part of the scene's beautiful.
Give him room. That left foot will carve you up. He doesn't kick it as much as he drops it. Soft. Right where it needs to be.
Pendlebury, we know how smooth he is. We know how classy he is.
Untouchable. In every sense of the word. Every moment counts.
He's so good.
Just his moments seem to last a little longer.
Pendlebury, the youngster, gives it a kick.
This week, the Power will get a close-up look at just how great he is.
Congratulations to the great Scott Pendlebury, sure. An amazing contributor not only to the Collingwood Football Club but to the whole game of Australian football.
Yep. What a player.
You're Pies greatest.
Let's talk about the grand final. Who wins a wet grand final at the Gabba? Who does this suit?
Who does it suit? I saw Brisbane, that second quarter they played the other night was just tremendous in the wet. I'm rusted on the Brisbane.
Yeah,
I've got to say Brisbane. But, I mean, the smart players are accentuated in poor conditions.
For mine, Richmond have been the best wet weather team in the competition for about the past 3 to 4 years. Their games in the wet have been remarkable. Their style suits. I think the conditions suit Richmond down to a T.
Gents, if we look ahead to this year's draft, the young man tipped to be the best footballer in this year's pool is tied to the Western Bulldogs as part of their Next Gen Academy. Jamara Ugelhagen. So what happens when Adelaide have picked one?
Well, that's the awkward one. They all know he's going to the Dogs. Do Adelaide bother to bid on him? Because it's an iconic moment when they say number one pick in the 2020 National Draft is so-and-so. Hang on, we've got a bid that's coming in for him. I think that'd be embarrassing. I think we need to work on that before we get to that point.
Good point. Pegs, we all sticking at that?
Come this far.
The Cat, The Last Dance. Gaz is back. It's going to be a documentary when they win this flag. Geelong,
well,
you watch.
I'm on
you
Richmond, watch. And you're welcome to jump on board anytime between now and
you
October 24th.
Late.
That's it for First Crack. We'll be back first week of the finals.